Glenn Beck.
A $750 birthday cake. How many times have you had one of those? Or you've spent $13,582 on your Beyonce concert. Or you spent $15,000 on a box so you could go see the Jaguars. Or, I remember when I went to the Barack Obama second inauguration and I took a bus trip from Jacksonville to Washington, D.C., and it cost me $89,852. These are just some of the ways former U.S. Representative Corrine Brown used the funds from her charity, One Door for Education. The $800,000 that was donated to the charity under the pretense that it would be used for scholarships was actually used, you know, for Beyonce concerts and stuff. Of the $800,000, only two scholarships were ever awarded, and they added up to, $1,200. Wow. She served 25 years in Congress. She is now going to serve some time in prison, 5 years. During the sentencing, the federal judge called Brown's actions especially shameless. He continued, said this was a crime born out of entitlement and greed, committed to ensure a lifestyle that was beyond her means. Think of the good that Corrine Brown could have done with that money instead of throwing lavish birthday parties with $800 cakes or gone shopping. Think of the children she could have helped. Now her legacy is one of avarice, greed, and unnecessary Beyonce concerts. A legacy that is far worse than even Ebenezer Scrooge.
It's Tuesday, December 5th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to introduce you to a guy named Mason Wells. Mason was an Eagle Scout and awarded a trip to Paris, France. He served as a missionary over in France. He's now in the United States Naval Academy. But I'm not talking to him about those things. That's not what got our attention. What got our attention is Mason Wells is a guy that happened to be at the Boston bombing, the Paris terrorist attack, and was significantly injured in the Brussels attack. I don't know of anybody else that, I mean, besides people who might have been involved, were at all three locations. And I can't imagine what it must feel like and how many times you must say, why me? There's a new book out, authored by Mason and a good friend of the program, Billy Hollowell, called Left Standing, and it's about his faith and what he has gone through. Mason, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Glenn.
So, you know, we were talking about this, and, you know, it's one of the reasons why we wanted just to have you on the phone and not here at the studio. You have really bad luck. Tell me about being in three terrorist attacks.
Oh, I think I actually have pretty good luck that I'm still here. my first experience with terrorism was at the 2013 Boston Marathon. And my mom was running the marathon. Me and my dad were there to support her. And me and my dad were actually 50 meters away when the first bomb went off at the finish line. So being young at the time, that was scary for me. Fast forward, now I'm serving as an ecclesiastical missionary in France. And I was actually in the city of Rouen at the time of the Charlie Hebdo shootings, and then in the city of Calais at the time of the Paris attacks. And to have those things go on in, you know, the headquarters of our mission, a place where we always were on the streets that we proselyted, it left me with a lot of questions and a lot of reflections. And then I was 10 feet away when the first bomb went off in the Brussels airport. And that one there put me in the hospital for a good 2 months.
Yeah, we saw you. We saw pictures of you all wrapped up. You had third-degree burns to your face. Your leg had some contraption, you know, trying to piece it back together. I mean, you were seriously injured there. What was going through your head?
Well, when I was first injured in Brussels, I actually thought I had died when the first bomb went off. If you can imagine that you're standing there for a moment, and suddenly everything explodes. That's what was happening to me, and I didn't know what was going on. When I opened my eyes a couple seconds after the blast and looked around, there was no one standing but me. Everyone else had been knocked down to the floor. My friends had been knocked out, and I couldn't see more than a few feet in front of me. So I made my way out of that airport, one step after another, on a ruptured Achilles tendon, completely severed, with shrapnel on my legs, burns to my hands and to my face. And when I got out of the airport, my leg collapsed. I was kind of faced with, you know, these two roads in front of me. I could either embrace bitterness, embrace anger, embrace frustration, or make the best of what was going on and choose to have hope that I would come out of this all right. And I chose the latter. So I was faced with a very bleak future, you know, quite literally laying in a pool of my own blood on that sidewalk. But through the grace of God and through some mental decisions I made, I'm still here.
So what was the darkest moment here? Did you have a real struggle in faith, or were you prepared spiritually to meet some of these things?
Well, I think that God prepares all of us for the things in our lives. I was blessed that day to be comforted when I was injured, but I did experience a lot of things afterwards that led me to questions about my faith and led me to develop a deeper faith. It prompted me to ask, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? Where is justice in all of this? What is God's plan for me? And those sorts of questions, those questions of the soul, they're things that take time. And, you know, some of my reflections, of course, from the book, but a lot of, you know, what I've learned about adversity and getting through trials came during my darkest moments. And there definitely were those dark moments.
So what did you come to the, you know, what was the conclusion? You know, why is this happening? Why does God, you know, where is God? I mean, you're serving a mission. You're blown up. And if I'm not mistaken, weren't you going home? Weren't you on your way home?
I was about 4 months away from going.
4 months away.
Sending another missionary off. Okay. Yeah. So that was pretty close.
All right. So, I mean, what was the conclusion? Why does God let this happen?
Well, you know, I've asked myself many times why God allowed this to happen to me and why I'm alive when other people that were farther away from the bomb were killed. But ultimately, I've come to find out for myself that God allows adversity to happen in our lives, knowing that it will make us stronger, knowing that we have a chance to come out on top, to allow these things to change us for the better or for the worse. One thing I've learned for sure is that God is there when we're willing to look for him and ask for his help. And ultimately, choosing to have hope amid the challenges in our lives is the difference between finding peace and being bitter about what's going on. Honestly, that I think just having a positive attitude, making every single day a new day and realizing that every single day was a chance for me to change, that mindset is what carried me through my recovery. And I can positively say that, you know, the line that divides success from failure is attitude much more than it is outcome.
So I just told a story yesterday about Corrie Ten Boom, who had a hard time forgiving and extending love to the people that, you know, in particular, one of the guys who was a guard in the showers. And she really, really had a hard time after the war forgiving him and loving him. How do you feel about the people that, you know, have brought so much death and destruction?
You know, that's a deep question. It's a good question. Ultimately, I've forgiven the people that did this to me, but it doesn't make what they did permissible. And, you know, I've actually prayed to God for them, that God would have mercy on them. But I know very well that God is a God of mercy and a God of justice. And I hope they can go on living in the next life the best they can, given the guilt that they'll undoubtedly bear. But you know, that being said, just because I forgive them, it doesn't make what they did okay. It's not permissible to do these things. It's the epitome of evil. What they did was evil, and I think that you can embrace forgiveness and also draw a hard line between good and bad.
Mason, if you were to win an all-expenses-paid vacation, would anyone go with you?
Besides no, Tom Hanks.
You know what? As crazy as it sounds, I mean, I'm not scared to travel the world. I'm not scared to take public transportation, to...
That wasn't the question.
Airplanes. I mean...
The question is anyone else comfortable with you being around?
I mean... You know, if you were to give me an all-expense-paid trip to Tunisia or something, I don't know if I'd go there right now.
Right, maybe okay, all right.
Bit, but, I mean, I'm not – we can't let these things hold us back. We can't let, you know, these moments and these acts define our lives.
Did you at any time have a moment where you're like, I'm cursed or there's something wrong or what am I doing wrong or I'm afraid to go places? Was there any time that started to happen to you?
Well, I have to admit, there was a time, I think it was about 3 days after I was injured in Brussels, that I was sitting in bed and I just kind of looked up and I just asked, you know, really? Again? I guess I didn't learn what I needed to do the first time. But,
okay, you're clearly telling me something. What is it?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, you know, I've thought about that. I choose to focus less on the past, you know, as to why these things happened, and focus more on the future, just making every single day a great day and making every single day a day I want it to be, because, you know, I'm still here and I'm grateful to be alive.
Mason Wells, author of Left Standing. Thank you so much. Best of luck.
And yeah, thank you so much for having me, Glenn.
Alert me if you're ever on a flight and you see me. Alert me. I need to get off. But...
Will do.
Thanks a lot, Mason. Merry Christmas.
The book is Left Standing, the miraculous story of how Mason Wells' faith survived the Boston, Paris, and Brussels terror attacks. It's an amazing story. Mason Wells...
What? Osama bin Laden survived all of them.
Oh, no, he didn't actually.
Actually, no.
He didn't,
right.
Actually. But, that's an amazing story. The Brussels, I mean, there's been so many of these attacks by, you know, largely Islamic extremists around the world. The 2016 Brussels bombings, 32 killed, over 300 injured. You'll remember the security camera tape of the guys walking through the airport.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's been so many of these, particularly in Europe, and it's amazing that this...
10 feet away from the bomb.
And ISIS did claim responsibility for that afterwards, to be able to muster the strength of will to forgive ISIS while obviously acknowledging what they do is not right. It's an amazing story. It's Left Standing.
Glenn Beck.
So I'm worried about revisionist history. I think many in our audience are, that, you know, precious things are being lost over decades. But there's a new pattern emerging that is even more terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, quickly on this Roy Moore thing, the thing that's concerning is it's getting harder and harder to put together a logical sense, like sequence of events to justify all of his behavior and excuses. There was another...
Because of him.
Yeah.
Not because of the stories, but because of him.
There was another person who came out with a card that was written to them, one of the accusers, that had a very similar signature to what was on... in the yearbook. But this part is... I have a real problem with. Here is Roy Moore at an event just the other night talking about these accusers.
Let me state once again, I do not know any of these women... Did not date any of these women, have not engaged in any sexual misconduct with anyone.
Now, that is a
wait,
blatantly false statement. Okay.
Now, what evidence do you have that that's blatantly false? He just said he doesn't know them, he never dated them, and he never had sexual relations with any of them.
My source on this would be Roy Moore. Here he is talking to Sean Hannity in his interview after the accusers came out.
I do not remember speaking to a civics class. I don't remember that. I do not remember when we, I seem to know, remember knowing our parents. I can that they were friends. I can't recall specific dates because that's been 40 years, but I remember her as a good girl. But neither of them have ever stated any inappropriate behavior. She didn't say anything that they.
Well, she said, but do you remember ever going on a date with her? She said that you asked her out on the first of several dates, but nothing progressed beyond kissing.
I don't remember specific dates. No, I do not. And I don't remember if it was that time or later, but I do not remember that. No.
But you know her, but you never dated her ever. Is that what you're saying?
Know her, but I don't remember going out on dates. I knew her as a friend. If we did go out on dates, then we did, but I do not remember that.
Okay. So he knows her.
And in earlier in the interview, he says both of their names,
yes.
Gloria Thacker Deason and Debbie Wesson Gibson.
He said, I remember their moms. I talked to their moms.
Remember talking to their moms. And right. Debbie Wesson Gibson is the person who has just come up with the card with Roy's signature on it, the one he said he knew.
And now he's
saying he never knew. He's saying now both of the people he admitted to knowing, he doesn't know.
So this is really weird because it always goes the other way. I didn't know them. I didn't know them. More evidence comes out. Okay, I did know them, but I never did any of those things. Mm-hmm. That's the way it normally goes.
Normally, yeah.
This is, okay, I know them, but I never did any of those things. To, I didn't know them. I've never even heard of them. I don't know them. I don't know who they are. Billy Bush. The tape. The president. Yeah, okay, I apologize. That was, you know, locker room talk. To now, I never said that. That was not my voice on tape. What?
Yeah, it's, you're right.
What?
It doesn't normally go that way. Usually goes the other way. I mean, look, I fully expect Roy Moore to win that race. I mean, I don't think he's going to lose it unless there's another
people
huge
of Alabama
bombshell. Yeah, I mean, that's how their system works,
yep.
Right? He's not being accused of a crime. I mean, he's saying of criminals, it would have been a crime at that time, but it's long past. He's not going through legal proceedings now. It's just a matter of whether you believe him or not. And
would
I hate
would
that
you vote
standard.
For him?
I wouldn't have voted for him anyway.
Yeah,
I liked Mo Brooks quite a bit and would have been very happy with him as the candidate, as we talked about at the time.
Yep.
He was good conservative.
You've
and,
got a candidate that's going to cause you real danger. This is not a grand slam here. This is not an easy, easy thing to happen.
Yeah, but I do expect him to win. The polls are fairly close there, but I don't think it's going to wind up being close unless there's another big bombshell that comes out. It's possible, if something were to really prove him wrong. But honestly, I would be stunned that America in 2017 did not put this guy in office. I'd be stunned.
We would take him out if he was the head of 7-Eleven, but we will put him in to be in the Senate.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. A couple things that we're watching. First of all, we got to get the writer of the article that said that doing an interview with Pence's wife. Pence's wife said that Donald Trump was, what did she call him?
Vile and reprehensible. But I think she meant that with love.
Yeah.
So don't you feel that way?
Yeah. Now they're distancing themselves from that and saying that's not true.
I mean, what are they going to say? Yeah, my wife hates him. Oh, my gosh. She can't stand that guy.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. She thinks he's a pig. Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, they have to deny that.
Yeah. Here's another thing. This is where, to me... this is where I think this Russia thing is going to get bogged down and going to bear possible fruit if you are looking to Barry Kushner or Trump. One of the guys who was the guy who, was gagged by the government, one of the informants on the Russian deal, said where you really need to look into collusion with Trump is in the business dealings. You'll find it in the bank records. So it looks like the FBI has just subpoenaed Deutsche Bank for financial information on Donald Trump and his kids. Deutsche Bank has already had rulings against them and faced severe fines because they have been convicted of money laundering for the Russians. And the day, let's see here, was it the day before, several weeks ago, let's see, blah, blah, blah. 1 month before Election Day, Jared Kushner finalized a $285 million loan from Deutsche Bank as part of a refinancing package. The Deutsche Bank has already received $630 million in penalties because it's involved in a $10 billion Russian money laundering scheme that involved the banks in Moscow, New York, London. Apparently, that's where a lot of bones are buried and bodies are buried. We'll see. But they are now moving into the banking of Donald Trump.
I tend to believe most of this stuff is, a lot of it's overblown, at least. But do you remember one of the main pitches during the campaign was Trump saying, if you put Hillary Clinton in, it's going to be nonstop investigations for the inherent. That was like a selling point.
Yeah,
I guess at this point, any president who's in there is going to be, you know, investigated over something or be in the middle of some controversy.
I don't think Hillary would be. I don't think Hillary. I'm not sure they would have done this against Hillary. I'm not sure. Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
Probably. Yeah, I mean,
well, maybe. She'd have the press on her side. So
yeah,
that
makes
would
it easier.
Call off some of the dogs, I think.
So it depends on who she had as vice president. If they liked the vice president, it was like if she would have had Cory Booker as her vice president, they would have fed her to the dogs. They would have fed her to the dogs. But maybe that's just me. Welcome to the program, Pat Gray.
Also, John Conyers is has announced his retirement today.
No.
So I
mean, saw that coming?
Nobody. I don't think anybody saw that. Right
now,
he's in the hospital.
He's retiring because of his health.
This has nothing to do with the sexual allegations.
The what?
The sexual harassment allegations.
I don't even recall those.
Yeah,
what were those?
It's just vile, awful people saying mean things about John because they don't like him.
Right. Okay.
But he's 88. Years old, mm-hmm. and some would say maybe it would have been time 20 years ago to go, but
really?
Yeah, he called into a radio show in Detroit, the Mildred Gattis show.
Oh, huge. I'm
huge guessing Mildred is not a millennial.
The Mildred Gattis show?
Who was
show?
The last baby ever named Mildred? It's got to be at least 60 years ago, right?
That name is huge in Silicon Valley.
They stopped with that name right after they stopped with Gertrude, and I think they retired both of those names.
Mildred
Gattis. Apparently, she's a big deal in Detroit, so he called in on her show and said, as of today, he's retiring, and he endorsed his son. What a surprise. He endorsed his son for his seat.
That's so good.
It's like, all right, I'm leaving, but my hand puppet is staying. All I'm going to do is stick my hand up its butt and tell it what to say, but you won't see my lips move. So,
wow, I don't hear this. I don't hear you say this about Prince Charles when, you know, people talk about Queen Elizabeth dying. She's going to hand it to her son.
No, that's actually a different system of government.
Yeah. Nothing to do with a system of government anymore.
No, in fact, I think we fought against that system of government.
Even England has basically overturned that form of government.
England is even saying, we don't want Prince Charles. That's
bad. That only happened 200 years ago, so I'm glad they still pretend.
Yeah.
Well, we don't want to stop pretending that they have power.
I mean, John Conyers was almost alive when it happened.
Think of that. He was halfway there.
Yeah.
The beginning of his life, we're almost halfway.
It's crazy. Incredible to think about.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
88 years old. What was it? How many terms was it?
27.
27 terms. I mean, it's unconscionable. And then what does he want to do? He wants to, quote unquote, retire so he can essentially extend his family's reign.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's ballsy.
It's as if we hand this down from, I mean, they still have to elect the guy. But somebody's going to be appointed, right? Until they have a special
it'll be John,
election.
It will be John Conyers' son.
Yeah, Conyers the third,
just like Jesse Jackson Jr.
The way they even advertise these races. I remember when we lived in Pennsylvania, I used to drive to the studios the same way every day, and I would go through this one area that had during an election, and it would just be vote number 7. Like, not even telling you what the issue was, not even telling you what the name was, nothing. It was just vote number 7. So people would see signs and vote number 7. They get in front of the ballot, it would say number 7. They did say vote number 7, so I better vote for number 7.
Wow. Did you ever look it up to see what number 7 was?
I don't remember.
But did you vote for number 7?
Oh, of course. Obviously, the sign said vote number 7.
It said to. But there was no other choice.
Are you not going to do what you're told by the sign? No.
But I think, like, when you go to when these, you know, this voting constituency is going to go to the polls, they're going to see a name that's familiar. It's just 3
sure.
instead of half of them won't even know that it's not the same John Conyers.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is just I honestly think, because people talk about ideology is totally backseat to party. But honestly, I think party even is backseat to name. If you have that name that people recognize, they don't care what the hell you do. They don't care if you switch parties 900 times. Mm-hmm. They don't care what it is. If you're famous and they know you, you're going to get votes.
Well, that's why dead people have been elected. Wasn't that Missouri where that happened? years ago?
Yes.
Yeah. Dead person won the election.
Against John, wasn't that John Ashcroft?
Yeah, it was John Ashcroft.
Was it Callahan?
Callahan. It was.
His wife served instead, right?
Mm-hmm. It's like, well, same last name.
They just knew his name. The fact that he wasn't breathing anymore didn't mean anything to the voters.
He'd probably be better now that he's not breathing.
Probably.
I mean, wait a minute. Hang on. Let's think about
that's
this.
It's not that bad when
you think
about it.
It's not bad. If we just elect a Congress full of dead people, we might get better laws.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot less offensive. I'll tell you that.
At least it would be
Watch C-SPAN all day long.
Be really quiet, fall asleep to it. It would be wonderful.
If they would just wheel one of them up once in a while, you know, just to prop them up.
Somebody who's on an iron lung, not quite dead yet, but just about to die.
No, I want them dead.
Okay.
I want them dead. Right. I want them dead.
And to be clear, we're talking about people who are previously dead elected.
Bring back... What, Charlie McCarthy or whatever that guy's name
was.
Let's
go back to the founders, man. If we can pick anybody, let's go back to the founders.
But we want to have some of the...
Let's get Washington,
I
get
want
Jefferson.
The famous ones, too. I want those guys, sure. But I also want the famous guys. I would like, you know, who is the guy that, you know, beat the other one with the cane?
Sumner.
Yeah, that was Charles Sumner, but who was the guy who beat him? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
I want that guy. Because you don't know. Maybe he'll do it again. You don't know.
And this time it'd be on video. It'd be viral.
Imagine if he's serving and one day he shows up and he's got a cane. And then you're watching and the next day he's just like a foot closer to somebody else. And you just move him every day.
Like Weekend at Bernie's.
Right, exactly
the
right.
The Congress edition.
Yeah.
I like it.
But they're in that position every day. So it's like a Macy's Christmas Day window, you know what I mean? Where every day C-SPAN goes on and they're all in a different position. And you're like, what happened? They only do laws when we're not watching. It's like Elf on a Shelf.
It'd screw up a lot less. It would be
great.
I'm all over it.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we have, I mean, you know, the system, government in many states, Texas being one of them, they don't show up all that often. That's good.
Every other year.
Yeah, every other year they show up, vote on a couple things.
How long have we said that the national Congress should do what Texas does? Just stay away every other year.
Can you imagine how great it would be?
That's
the way it was.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. This was not a full-time job. You were there for a few months every other year.
And you had a job where you worked around... other people.
Yeah.
And so you got to hear and stay in touch with people because you were there with them.
The reason why they really liked Washington, D.C. is because it was so miserable and it was so full of malaria that they were like, nobody's going to want to stay here. Nobody's going to want to stay here because it's just miserable.
It was a swamp.
Right.
I'm not sure the American people are ready for more personal time with John Conyers, though. I don't think that's a good idea for them. I think maybe...
Why? What could possibly go wrong?
Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. Glad you're here. Today at 5 o'clock, we're going to go in depth on a couple of things. First, the travel ban. the Supreme Court has said, yep, we're good with a travel ban. What? We might change our mind later this week. So it's just, it's nonsensical what is happening. We're going to break it all down for you. And then I want to talk to you about what the president did yesterday in Utah. It was a good step in the right direction by overturning the huge land grab that Barack Obama did with bear's ears in Utah, just seized all this land. We have some pretty shocking inside information on that that we will we'll give to you. And what should happen, what we should be cheering for, is not necessarily what happened yesterday, but it was a step in the right direction. And we'll give you that at 5 o'clock. Also, we'll give you an update on the Supreme Court hearing on the gay baker, or the straight baker who didn't want to make a gay wedding cake. A very lefty kind of reporter just left the Supreme Court and just tweeted this.
That things did not go well, apparently, for that side of the argument. It was someone from Think Progress who said the argument went terribly for the pro-equality side. Kennedy is almost certainly going to side with the gay baker. The anti-gay baker was the way I believe he put it. So I would not agree with that analysis, but it's a good sign if he thinks it went badly, because this is not about whether you like gay people or anything like that. It's about the freedom of being able to do with what you want with your day.
And your talent and what you have to endorse if you are religiously against it.
But there's limits to freedom, you know? I think we all recognize that. I mean, for example, this guy in Illinois, he had a Dunkin' Donuts vanilla latte flavored Pop-Tarts he was eating. And he says, you guys ain't from Illinois if you don't put mustard on your Pop-Tarts.
No, you're not from Earth. You are. You need to be in prison.
It's interesting you say that, because
you're right. I was thinking, nah, when you said, you know, there are some limits to freedom, I thought, no, there's, I can't think of really any real big ones.
Now you can, right?
Yeah, mustard on Pop-Tarts, mm-hmm. You bet. On what kind of Pop-Tart?
On a Dunkin' Donuts vanilla latte Pop-Tart, which I did not know existed. Now, Pop-Tarts, the official Twitter handle, actually responded and says, can you guys handle this, to the Illinois State Police? They did not respond, but the Dixon Police said, let us know if they don't handle this, Pop-Tarts, because we will. Nobody's putting mustard on their Pop-Tarts in Illinois. So at least I think, I'm not a fan of big government per se.
No, but desecrating a Pop-Tart. Okay, can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody thinks I'm nuts. Do you, there is a topping for Pop-Tarts that I, oh boy, you're looking at me wrong. We'll get into this tomorrow. This is important.
No, but I want.
This is important.
Okay, yeah, I'm in.
Glenn Beck.